Hello, I'm Ira Gladstone. This is number 0659, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0659. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Michel Jacques Gagné is the author of Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination, Debunking the Myths and Conspiracy Theories.
I gotta say, there's a lot of either disinformation or panic or paranoia in the news. I think it's always been the case. It's just amplified by the fact that we carry these little phones in our hands everywhere. So it's not like we're just reading the newspaper once a day or watching the 6 p.m. news like my dad did. We're all plugged into it 24/7.
Cherry Beck Paprocki is the author of Freelance Fancy, your guide to capturing spiritual health, wealth, and happiness from gig work.
I decided to write the book. It was back in 2018, and I'll be honest, it was at a point where I was ending a term as president of the American Society of Journalists and Authors, a group of 1,200 very prolific freelance writers and authors. And it felt like a point at which there was a lot of information I needed to share.
Science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, is back to talk about the pariah that Russia has become in space.
Definitely the crisis here on the ground is really starting to affect a lot of the space exploration efforts, the joint projects that nations have that involve Russia is really being jeopardized right now. A lot of the sanctions that are being brought on by federal agencies in different countries are also impacting those agreements that exist between Russia and those different countries.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0659, was Ira Gladstone, a.k.a. Mr. Fix-It. Those in Montreal who remember his advertising slogan will remember that Mr. Fix-It could fix anything, anything but a broken heart. And those who wish to contact Mr. Fix-It can do so the old-fashioned way, telephonically, at 514-484-8332. That's 514-484-8332. Thank you very much, Ira, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A California woman who was sick of her boyfriend going to strip clubs came up with an elaborate surprise for the man. 40-year-old Missy Peterson tracked her boyfriend of 2 years to a strip club, then showed up and convinced the club to let her dance. Peterson took to the stage in a pink thong and 7-inch platform heels. She said, "I got on stage in a bra and thong that one of the strippers gave me, walked up to him and said, 'Oh, you want a show? I'll give you a show.'" Peterson added that she made $100 in tips. She detailed the incident on TikTok and it went viral. Peterson, a real estate agent from Laguna Beach, said her boyfriend had admitted to his love of strip clubs and even said he sometimes had sex with women there. He had promised he was done with them, but was tracked there after he kept disappearing. Said Peterson, "When I saw that he was at a strip club, I grabbed a brown wig and the stripper shoes I keep in my closet, and I went to the club. He was in absolute shock when he saw me. He was really pissed, but I don't care. I went to all of the other guys, danced in front of them, and collected their money. She gave her now ex-boyfriend the finger as she exited the stage and told him he would never see her again. Let's back up a second here. She already had a brown wig and stripper shoes in her own closet? Oh my. That ex is just plain greedy. Missy Peterson can do better, and judging by the tips, she already has. In Warren, Ohio, police responded to a robbery call with a twist straight out of elementary school. As a 22-year-old man walked along a road late on March 27th, a man wearing a ski mask approached him and asked if he was a drug dealer. When the victim said no, the robber allegedly pulled out a knife and demanded money. After the thief got about 80 bucks from him, he made the victim pinky promise that he wouldn't call the cops, then rode off on a bicycle. So far, the police have not located the pinky promise perp. So, wait a minute. The victim didn't honor the pinky promise? Oh, what is this world coming to? An unidentified crane driver in Dublin, Ireland, lost his job after he recorded himself dropping a bag of his own excrement from the crane cab onto a roof on March the 30th. While flinging the sick sack overboard, the man joked about the joys of being a crane driver and laughed, much to the horror of social media viewers who saw the video. The construction company said the driver had been removed immediately and would not work for any of our other sites in the future. They also asked social media platforms to remove the video. Wow, flinging his feces like a primate for all to see online. Well, at least he didn't slap anybody.
That was a greatest night in the history of television.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the owner of a tree removal service in Dearborn, Michigan, has been arrested after several warnings about dumping debris in Detroit city limits. Police said Mahmoud Saad already had more than $14,000 in fines before his arrest on March 25th, which he had paid. Said Officer Jeremy Woods, vehicles that have been registered to this person, we have caught 8 different times on our dumping cameras. Every time we talk to him, he acts like he's remorseful, and then he does it again. Commander Eric Decker called it a slap in the face. By the way, we now know what a slap in the face looks like.
Out of it.
Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me.
Saad was held on a misdemeanor charge, which may result in more fines and having to pay for cleanup at multiple locations.
At your highest moment, be careful. That's when the devil comes for you.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Late next year will be the 60th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. How and why he was assassinated, and in some corners, even if he was assassinated, is a topic that is still being debated all these years later. Michel Jacques Gagné is the author of Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination, Debunking the Myths and Conspiracy Theories. Michel teaches courses in critical thinking, political philosophy, philosophy of religion, and ethics at Champlain College here in Quebec, and he's also the host of the podcast Paranoid Planet. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Michel.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Do you sometimes, when you consider what you do for a living, talking critical thinking, debunking myths, do you sometimes feel in this day and age that you're like Sisyphus trying to push a rock up a hill?
Well, I got to say, there's a lot of either disinformation or panic or paranoia in the news. I think it's always been the case. It's just amplified by the fact that we carry these little phones in our hands everywhere. So it's not like we're just reading the newspaper once a day or watching the 6 p.m. news like my dad did. We're all plugged into it 24/7.
How did this book come to be? When did you start doing this deep dive? And how deep of a dive did you have to do to write this book, Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination?
Well, it's a pretty deep dive. I would say it's the research has been going on for almost 30 years, because I think I was 21 years old when Oliver Stone made that film JFK in the early 90s, and something kind of took hold. I was always interested in the paranormal and the mysterious. As a kid, I loved UFOs, and you know, I remember listening to like biblical prophecies with great interest when my dad would take me to church. So I think I was always kind of interested in the mysterious, but I think Oliver Stone kind of pushed me in the world of political conspiracy theories, and I was studying political science at McGill at that time. And it was during the first Gulf War against Saddam Hussein. And that's when you're finding out a lot of the different governments have propaganda. Even the Americans were talking about Saddam Hussein killing babies and pulling them out of their, those machines there for premature babies, incubators.
Incubators, yeah.
So I remember kind of all this stuff hitting me at the same time and starting to be more and more skeptical, but not in the good sense, of mass media, even of what I was reading in school. And I think that's when I kind of became more interested in political conspiracies, and I think the JFK one was always there in the forefront. So I would call myself a recovering conspiracist, because I think for almost 20 years, I believe that the Kennedy assassination was that one conspiracy theory that's probably true. But then something changed when I actually read the government's Warren Report, the American government's investigation. And I realized that whether or not you like what it says, the conspiracists were deliberately bending and ignoring many things that were in the government's own report. So it was sort of a form of fake news on its own.
Now, as I mentioned, you teach critical thinking, and I've always believed that critical thinking is not something that should be just left to those who go to university or CEGEP, that critical thinking should be taught in high schools, if not elementary schools. How do you feel about that?
I completely agree. In fact, I think I write in the book, this is the kind of book I should have read when I was in college, and maybe even younger. Now, this book addresses more of a kind of maybe a somewhat educated population. But I think even kids should be made aware of how to study the media, how to understand bias, how to understand even just, I mean, you know, as a journalist that, you know, you're tight for time, you have a deadline, there's a particular angle, or there's only a limited amount of research you can do. And that's what ends up being like in the New York Times or other places that we consider to be the voice of truth or the voice of history. So I think from a young age, people need to be aware that media is a little bit like having conversations with people who know stuff, but they don't know everything. And sometimes they get things wrong.
Hmm. I sort of joked in the introduction that some people out there don't even believe that Kennedy was assassinated. I mean, it was just last year that we had people gathering in Daley Plaza waiting for John F. Kennedy to show up. And just the absurdity of that, first of all, the man is over 100 if he's alive.
Well, I need to correct you there. I think this is the QAnon movement, and they were talking about John or John Kennedy Jr.
They were talking about both.
Really?
They were talking about both. And the idea that a man over 100 years old is going to return to the scene of his supposed assassination is just ludicrous on every level. Yes, but they were expecting both John and his father to show up there. And I go back to the question I said earlier. How do you puncture this as a teacher when so many people are willing to believe, quite frankly, the outrageous?
Well, I mean, I think we all believe in things that to other people are ludicrous. You know, I was raised as a Christian, so believing that a guy came back from the dead is crazy for some other people. However, I think enough people saw John F. Kennedy's head explode, that there's at least enough information and evidence available to say that you don't come back from something like that. So I think there's a lot, you know, some people believe Elvis is still alive. Some people believe there's life on other planets. And most people would say that's a rational belief, even though there's no evidence whatsoever to support it. It's just that the universe is big. You know, that's the only reason that people could give to say there's probably life out there. So I think that the whole JFK conspiracy crowd is actually much more rational than some of the other things out there, you know, lizard people or fake lunar landings. There's no brainwashing. There's no laser beams. There's no little green men. in the vast majority of Kennedy conspiracy lore. It's largely people who feel hurt. They don't understand this chaotic event. It doesn't make sense to them. They reject the idea that a lone Marxist could have killed a man they admired. And then they go looking for alternative reasons, alternative explanations. Some of them are incredibly complex, but somehow they can convince themselves that they make sense. And I think most people would understand that religious thinking is that. And I'm not anti-religious at all, but everybody believes in something that coheres, that makes sense as a story, rather than something that's based on empirical evidence.
Now, as I said, you've done this deep dive. The book is called Critical Thinking About the Kennedy Assassination. In doing your deep dive, and having been someone who has followed this for a while, what did you learn that surprised you in doing the research for your book?
What surprised me? Well, I've been reading about the literature, the academic literature about conspiracy theories. This is a field that's getting much larger recently. A lot of political scientists, psychologists are kind of jumping on this this trend. It dates back to the 60s from a man called Richard Hofstadter, who wrote a famous article called The Paranoid Style in American Politics. I think what surprised me the most is that I think conspiracy thinking is not something that comes from mental illness. It's not either necessarily a political or a psychological problem. I think it's an existential problem. I think most of us want to belong to a story, a narrative that gives us very clear markers of what is good, what is evil, and how we belong in that story. And of course, most of us believe that we're on the good side. So when something in the news challenges any of those assumptions, we try to complete the story, or we sometimes change the story so that we come out with a fulfilling, meaningful life story that puts us on the side of the good, and that says that what we've been doing with our lives is important. It's not wasteful. So in that sense, I'd say it's part of a larger category of myths that often make us better people, but they can sometimes attack our trust in institutions or just our grasp with reality, our ability to communicate with other human beings.
We have just about a minute to go, but I got to ask you, I mentioned in the introduction that you are also the host of the podcast, Paranoid Planet. Tell us about the podcast, how it began, and what it's about.
Well, my friend Joanne and I, Joanne is in the film industry, and I teach history and philosophy. We got together to create a conversation on a subject that's very divisive, conspiracy theory, but that would hopefully improve public discourse. We don't do personal attacks against conspiracy theorists, though we tend to disagree with most of them. We want them on our show, though many of them don't necessarily want to come on our show. We have many academics of different branches who will talk about some element to help us understand conspiracy thinking. And we also have long-form interviews with experts.
Wow. I wish you were a teacher when I was in Sejep. Anyway.
I'm trying to teach less so I can focus on my podcasting fetish.
The book is Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination, Debunking the Myths and Conspiracy Theories. Also, the podcast is Paranoid Planet. Where can that be found, by the way?
Everywhere. Apple, Google, Spotify, everywhere Rogan is, we're there, except our numbers are still a little bit lower. So you can look for us there or go to our website, paranoidplanet.ca.
Excellent. Michel, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. It was a joy.
Michel Jacques Gagné, author of Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination, Debunking the Myths and Conspiracy Theories, and the host of the podcast, Paranoid Planet. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the show number for this program, which is show number 0659, and you'll find links to Michel's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program.
Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about working in the freelance gig economy. Plus, Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is on the program to talk about, among other things, Russia being a pariah in space. But we have more Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on as well. So let's get back to the news, shall we? I don't want to bore you, but England's University of Essex has studied the matter and its Department of Psychology came up with the five most boring jobs in the world: data analysis, accounting, tax insurance, cleaning, and banking. And the five most boring hobbies, which are sleeping, religion, watching TV, observing animals, and mathematics. Said Dr. Wijnand van Tilburg, who led the study, this paper shows how persuasive perceptions of boredom are and what an impact they can have on people. Its conclusion: religious data entry workers who like watching TV are the most boring people. Well, that's the additive answer. The subtractive answer would likely be that the most boring people are university researchers who study boredom. But I digress. Okay, there are definite benefits to getting vaccinated for COVID, but there may be an occasional downside, as this story depicts. When Randy Clark was notified about the COVID vaccine he'd received in Newport, Tennessee, he had a problem with it. He hadn't been vaccinated there. Court papers say store surveillance video showed Jerry Blankenship was the person who had obtained the vaccination under the victim's name. 65-year-old Blankenship hadn't just used Clark's name to get a vaccine. He'd been living under that name for over 40 years. Prosecutors say Blankenship had assumed Clark's identity at the urging of his wife so that he could avoid being found by the Navy, which he deserted after basic training. He never divorced her, but Blankenship's current girlfriend of 30 years and their three children didn't know his true identity, wrote Blankenship's daughter in a letter of support before his sentencing. Daddy has always been an incredible, faithful, caring, and honest man. I guess she was omitting the 40-year identity theft, or the first wife he skipped out on. Anyway, Blankenship was sentenced to 25 months in prison. The Navy also plans to extradite him. So, he left the Navy without telling them, left his wife without divorcing her. I may be going out on a limb, but he might have commitment issues. Just saying. And speaking of COVID, a German man allegedly got the COVID-19 vaccine not once, not twice, not even three times, but at least 87 times. The 61-year-old allegedly carried out his shot campaign in Saxony for anti-vaxxers who didn't want to get the shot themselves, paying the man to get it on their behalf. According to police, the man went to three different vaccination clinics a day and presented his name and birth date, but not his health insurance card, which could have alerted authorities sooner. The scheme was busted after an employee at a vaccination clinic in Dresden recognized the man. He was arrested and charged by the German Red Cross for selling the vaccination records, prompting calls for a national vaccine database. Said Knut Kohler, a spokesperson for the Saxony State Medical Association, a national vaccine register or a coronavirus vaccine register would have shed light on this case immediately. I know he was arrested and charged, but he should also be studied. I mean, he got at least 87 doses of the COVID vaccine. His arm must look like a giant golf ball, and heavens knows what that amount of vaccine is doing to his system. Ew. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a driving instructor in Pasco County, Florida, was arrested for allegedly driving under the influence. The Florida Highway Patrol wrote on its Tampa Twitter account that troopers arrested the instructor for driving with an alcohol content of nearly 3 times the legal limit. To top it off, the instructor was driving an official vehicle from the All Florida Safety Institute, the largest provider of in-person driver's license testing in the state of Florida. A photo from the FHP showed the vehicle with its student driver logo in full display. FHP also wrote, "Hopefully, this isn't part of the driving curriculum." Yeah, you know what's missing in this world today? Conscientious driving instructors.
You've been drinking.
No, it's cough medicine. Check out this phlegm.
Save the phlegm. You're not driving anyone.
I'll tell you something, and this is fact. You know why so many drunk drivers get in wrecks? Because they don't learn to drive drunk.
Fact. Alcohol kills brain cells. You lose one more, you're a talking monkey.
Exactly. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? As last year's great resignation has evolved into this year's great reimagination of the workplace, Sherry Beck Paprocki is here with some advice for those who are looking for more flexibility and freedom in their careers. Sherry is an award-winning author, editor, and journalist. She is a past president of the American Society of Journalists and Authors. Her work has been featured in the Chicago Tribune, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and more than 100 other publications. Her latest book is Freelance Fancy, Your Guide to Capturing Spiritual Health, Wealth, and Happiness from Gig Work. Sherry joins us via Zoom from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. We've had an opportunity to talk to several people through the years about being a freelance person and leaving the job market behind, or having the job market leave you behind. But it's becoming more and more important because it's happening literally more and more. So when did you choose to throw your hat into the ring on this topic and write the book Freelance Fancy?
Well, Peter, I decided to write the book. It was back in 2018. And I'll be honest, it was at a point where I was ending a term as president of the American Society of Journalists and Authors, a group of 1,200 very prolific freelance writers and editor and authors. And it felt like a point at which there was a lot of information I needed to share. So this started as an outline on an airplane and a brain dump, and then took several years where I would slide it into the drawer and say, well, I don't know that this is working. Pull it back out, revisit it. You know, it was a year into the pandemic when I got out of the shower one day and this little voice said, you know, that book is still in the drawer and you need to get it out there. And so it's been about a year that I recommitted that I would go ahead and publish the book.
Now, as I'm sure you are aware, being someone who is a journalist and an author, you're kind of halfway into the freelance market in the first place. I mean, it's very transferable tools. I think every one of us who is in the situation we are in this business realizes at some point or another that they could also do what they do on their own, especially as technology moves forward. I'm wondering what kind of tips you have to offer to people who don't have sort of like the launch pad that we as journalists have to get ourselves out there into a broadcast or into a freelance situation.
That's an excellent question, Peter. So the tips that I have is it's really not as hard as people think it is. I know it's very difficult to make that leap. And for a lot of people, they get to make it in their own time. And for other people right now, they're at a point where it's not their choice. They just decide this is the direction to go. I think that the need for content has created an amazing opening for any content provider, whether that's a video, whether that's audio, whether that's writing, journalism, whatever, graphic design, whatever field, creative field that you might be in. So here's how to get started. Make a list of the people you know. These are the people who are going to give you gig work, okay? It can be from all of your past business relationships to your current contact list, So you're just going to make this list, a long list of people you know. It may be aunts, uncles, and cousins who own businesses. Everyone needs websites. Everyone needs help these days. So depending on what your specialty area is, you can get your foot in the door with a group of people. So you make this sort of unwieldy list of 100 people, say, and then you narrow it down. You ask yourself this question: who has the money to pay me for work? And this is at a rate of $50 an hour, $75 an hour, maybe it's $125 an hour. And I would tell anyone, if you've been in business for 5 years or longer, I'm sorry, if you've been a professional for 5 years or longer, you need to charge a minimum of $50 an hour. I think you can easily get away with $75 to $100 an hour, even with that amount of experience. And then what you do, you bring that list of 20 people who can pay me. Then you begin sending out emails. Hey, I'm thinking about changing my situation. I'm thinking about taking on a few gigs or a few side gigs. So you can do this as you're also holding a full-time job in the beginning. Start putting your feelers out there. You know, fortunately, right now, at least in North America, we can still go out for coffee with people. We haven't had another peak yet of coronavirus. So meet up for coffee with some people. Now, here's the next key. Listen to what their work challenges are. So say, what's your biggest challenge with what you're trying to accomplish at work? And help those people solve their problems. So no matter what field you're coming out of, you can listen to them clearly about what challenges they might have in their, let's say they run a small business, or let's also say they might be the marketing vice president for Wendy's International. Try to schedule a meeting, say what problems are you having, brainstorm with them to solve those problems. If the meeting lands at a point where you think you can say, you know what, I think I can help you, let me get back to you with a proposal. And then you write a very simple proposal with them that explains what you can do, and you hope that they sign off at the rate that you've offered them.
Again, you talk about that rate. What happens if you are in a situation, because we are in a time frame where companies, for lack of a better term, will try and lowball you.
Right.
So when does it become, for lack of a better term, insulting? Or when do you point out that it might be insulting? Or do you ever point out that it might be insulting? How do you negotiate that price, in other words?
I never point out that it might be insulting. But what I have learned in over 3 years of freelance work, I'm sorry, three decades of freelance work, is, you know, you can kind of spot those people coming. So that's why I mentioned early on, think about the people who will have the budget to pay you. I know when I start getting inquiries with people who may lowball me, and what they, you know, they don't immediately start out with, this is the rate we can offer you. It's, hey, I think you might be able to help. We'd love to have you involved in this project. And this will come from people you know. And so what I do is give them the spiel that, well, you know, with what you're telling me, this is going to take 20 hours a week. Peter, I just did this yesterday with my brother-in-law. This is going to take me 20 hours a week at this rate, which amounts to about $4,000 a month, blah, 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 blah. And you know fairly quickly if those people are buying in, or, oh, I thought I had a big budget, but I really don't have a big budget. Now, you know, we're in this situation right now where we have a lot of, I don't want to name specific agencies, but they hire freelancers, they get giant contracts from places like Nationwide Insurance and other places, and they charge these corporations a lot of money to produce content, and then they turn around on the freelance market, and they want to pay freelancers very little money for that. I would say this to most people thinking about gig work: go to the people you know who have a budget to pay you. Try to avoid those third-party vendors. they will make a lot of money off of your work. And, you know, that's easy to do, is to Google those places. And yes, oh yes, we have a lot of work. You can sign up on several, but work with people you know to start with. Say, hey, you know, I just thought I might take this on. And you will start seeing people's brains percolating in ways that you'll be able to help them.
Do you ever, you know, the lobbing back and forth across the tennis net of salary, do yes. you ever go on the defensive as opposed to the offensive? In other words, if somebody says, what do you charge? Do you ever ask, what's your budget for this?
Yes, I think that's okay, Peter, to ask that. I do ask people that question. You know, they're going to lowball you. And so what I have learned is, and you know, a lot of freelancers call this stuff the pain in the ass fee. What I have learned is never to lowball a quote to anyone. So if they say, well, this is my budget, and you just don't see it happening, and you know, in my world, through the years, I've had many people pitch me on, hey, I'd love to write a book. And I say, you know, really, it's about $50,000 or less to hire, or more to hire a ghostwriter. And that ends the conversation pretty quickly. And that's okay, because I'm not looking for that kind of work. But if you are looking for that kind of work and you've never done ghostwriting for a book, perhaps, what you might want to say is, I've never done that. I'd be willing to try with you. Let's start thinking about this as a gig that will probably cost you at least $20,000. How do you feel about that? And really, you know, I think what we have to do is remove the emotion from the conversation about money. And for many years, I didn't know that, Peter. It took me a good 20 years to, I would say, to learn this and to really have the money conversations without feeling offended that people would not respect the amount of work I put into something enough to think it was worth being paid. And the reality is, when you allow one person to take advantage of you, it just happens over and over and over again. So what I tell most people to do is look yourself in the mirror, say, I am worth $100 an hour, and don't you offer me an ounce less, and march forward with that attitude. Then maybe you can charge $75 an hour to your actual clients, but in reality, you're feeling like your value, you have to own that value for yourself. You're feeling like what you provide is a really valuable service that not everyone can do for themselves.
Now, your book, as I mentioned, is called Freelance Fancy. The tips you've just described here, they're more geared in what we've been talking about in our shared business. But these are tips that can be transferable to anybody who has a talent that can be gigged, correct?
Exactly, Peter. Exactly. There are tips here that are very good tips for entrepreneurs, for people who are solopreneurs starting up new businesses of any kind. The reality of our society right now is we have to develop sort of that influencer brand. You have to know the 20 people who are going to sell, who are going to purchase your work from you, whether you're making crafts, whether you're selling accounting services, whatever you're selling. Know the 20 possible clients that you could work with before you decide to go that direction.
Excellent tips. Again, the book is Freelance Fancy, Your Guide to Capturing Spiritual Health, Wealth, and Happiness. Sherry, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thanks for the opportunity.
Sherry Beck Paprocki, author of Freelance Fancy, Your Guide to Capturing Spiritual Health, Wealth, and Happiness from Gig Work. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0659, and you'll find links to Sherry's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. And Andrew, because of the war in Ukraine and the fact that it's still going on, Russia is becoming a global pariah, and that means they're also becoming a pariah in space.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the crisis here on the ground is really starting to affect a lot of the space exploration efforts, the joint projects that nations have that involve Russia. Is really being jeopardized right now. A lot of the sanctions that are being brought on by federal agencies in different countries are also impacting those agreements that exist between Russia and those different countries. So we see the effects on things like Mars exploration. There's an ExoMars rover project between Europe, the European Space Agency, and Russia, that's now being put on hold. This is a rover that was destined to launch end of this year, and that's been mothballed, and we don't know until when. I mean, the rover is built, it's ready to go, and it's now just put on hold. That's a huge, big impact there. There's also things like astronomy satellites. There's a Russian astronomy satellite with a German instrument on board that's designed to study black holes. Germany has decided to literally turn it off, their instrument, and there's no more data streaming from their instrument aboard that Russian satellite. And then you have, you know, more wider implications with the human space program, particularly with the ISS. We've seen the head of the Russian space agency, Roscosmos agency, Dmitry Rogozin, who is being, you know, putting out really bombastic remarks on social media that has infuriated astronauts here in North America, particularly Scott Kelly coming back and really hitting hard on social media back at the head of the space agency in Russia over things like crazy remarks that he's been making. Good luck, Americans. If the space station loses its ability to maneuver, it might crash into your country. Good luck with that.
And there was even the situation where there was a threat to the American who was on the space station up until just recently as to how he was going to get home.
Yeah, exactly. That they would. You have to remember that the Soyuz capsule that's docked with the International Space Station is the main way of returning back to Earth, and it's the main way of sending cargo as well, not just astronauts. And so, yeah, there was a threat from the head of the Russian Space Agency saying, well, good luck finding another, another way of getting home. And, you know, some of the threats that he has made he's already followed through with the human space program and the rocket industry as well, particularly like the launch pad that the European Space Agency has in French Guiana in South America, where most of the satellites that the European Space Agency puts up into orbit launches from. The launch crew there is run by the Russians, and they've kind of removed themselves from operating in that system. And, you know, this is going to affect a lot of, you know, trickle down to a lot of different launches of both human and robotic spacecraft.
Well, speaking of the situation with Russia and their ongoing battle with Ukraine, Elon Musk has stepped into the fray with the Starlink communications devices that he's offering up to Ukraine.
That's right. So this delivery of hundreds of Starlink basically equipment that allows folks to have access to high-speed internet through satellite communication. These are basically small car-sized satellites that the SpaceX company has been putting up, hundreds of them in a chain, a constellation of them around the Earth to basically democratize access to the internet. And so from remote locations, using this suitcase-sized contraption, you can actually connect to a high-speed internet. And so Musk basically delivered hundreds of these packages that would allow folks in Ukraine to connect to the internet. And this was after, of course, a plea from the Vice Prime Minister of Ukraine, who put out a direct plea on Twitter for Musk to help out. And sure enough, he delivered a truckload of these dishes basically to Ukraine. All of this played out on the internet. You could even see the tweets of the truckloads of all the Starlink equipment being delivered. And this is being used by the military there in controlling drones. We've heard so much in the news about the drones making such a pivotal effect in the course of the war, of how Ukraine has managed to push back against Russia by using drone intelligence. And they control these drones through internet access. And it's been key in a lot of their successes, these drones. And that's, they're operating using the Starlink system.
Interesting indeed. Now, getting back to NASA, they have had their rocket rollout, the SLS?
That's right. So the SLS system has a troubled past for NASA in terms of delay upon delay, technical challenges, it's finally reaching the launch pad for what they call a wet test, where they're going to fire up the engines, basically fill the rocket up with fuel and fire the engines on site without it actually launching, test on the launch pad in the next, probably in the month of April, early May. And this is all a setup for the first orbital actual test of the rocket system, and also the capsule that they have, the Orion capsule, of going around the moon unmanned. Hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have our first kind of orbit where it goes way beyond the moon. In fact, it'll be the farthest human-rated spacecraft to go from Earth ever. Once it does this test mission, it'll be completely unoccupied. There'll be no humans on board. But this wet test that's going to happen within the next few weeks is really going to be critical to see if we can get that next launch, the actual launch of the spacecraft going to the moon, orbiting it. Because if that one goes well at the end of the year, then the next launch after that, which we expect maybe a year or two after that, will take humans in a swing around the moon And that will lead to the final landing, a return of humans to the moon, probably in the year, right now we're tagged at 2025 of seeing the humans return to the moon, where we see the first African-American and woman to land on the moon.
Fascinating stuff indeed. As usual, we've run out of time, and there are other things I wanted to talk to you about. NASA's announcement about exoplanets, and on a more lighter note, a real version of the Starship Enterprise. When would something like that be built? So I'm asking you if we can go to Patreon and discuss those things. But before we get to those things and we go to Patreon, I've got to ask you about Global Astronomy Month, which is April.
That's right.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is the world's largest festival that celebrates astronomy in the night sky. And it's run by a wonderful nonprofit, international nonprofit called Astronomers Without Borders. And Global Astronomy Month is a flagship event. It involves over 140 different countries around the world where folks, regular folks, amateur astronomers, put on all kinds of actual live events in their cities, towns, and parks, and also online. So people can go to astronomerswithoutborders.org and find out all the wonderful events that are happening around the world celebrating our shared heritage of the night sky.
And is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to during this month from your excitement level?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an observer of the night sky. So there's an amazing conjunction, basically an encounter of the moon and our largest, brightest neighboring planets, Jupiter and Venus, at the end of April, April 24th to the 30th. And it's visible right across the world in the early morning skies at dawn. People will see the crescent moon joining these super bright planets. And we're going to have events at Astronomers Without Borders live streaming this so people can see them from their devices. But with your own eyes, you can go out and we'll have events related to that.
And once again, you mentioned Astronomy Without Borders. They have a website that people can go to get more information and to see some of these things.
Simple enough. It's astronomerswithoutborders.org.
So astronomerswithoutborders.org, correct?
You betcha.
Excellent. Now, let's go over to Patreon and talk about building a Starship Enterprise.
Beam me up.
Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0659, and you'll find links to Andrew's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. And Patreon subscribers, you can hear more of Andrew as a Patreon reward extra as we discuss NASA's announcement of the discovery of exoplanets and just how do you build the Starship Enterprise. Just go to our Patreon page, and if you're not already a member, become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you right here, right now. 41-year-old Christopher Whetstone was arrested March 29th after authorities carrying out a search warrant at his home in Temecula, California, found two rocket launchers and a practice grenade in a trash can. He was charged with grand theft, although it's unclear whether the charges are related to the discarded heavy artillery items. Riverside County Sheriff's Department Sergeant Edward Soto said narcotics and a bazooka were also found in the home, which is adjacent to a middle school. Whoa. Let me get this straight. Two rocket launchers, a grenade, a bazooka, and narcotics, all next to a middle school? Did anybody else have this on their bingo card? On March 29th, an unidentified man scaled the barbed wire fence at Midway Airport in Chicago and approached a private jet that had been cleared for takeoff. As he tried to stall the plane, he removed his shirt, shoes, jacket, and pants, Police said he appeared to be intoxicated. He jumped up on a wing of the plane. The pilot, in contact with air traffic control, said, "He's right here on the front of the jet. He's trying to get in. Our door is open here." Chicago police apprehended him and took him to a local hospital for a mental evaluation. In other words, a checkup from the neck up. The plane eventually took off. Well, at least this wannabe traveler didn't need help with his luggage. Actually, he might have to unload some baggage. And a woman was scheduled to make a court appearance in Dublin, California, after being arrested for stealing a car. Would you like to guess how she got to said court appearance? Yep. 41-year-old Brandy Jones used another stolen car to get to court. When she arrived at the Dublin courthouse, authorities determined Jones was driving a stolen vehicle right after authorities took the woman back to Santa Rita Jail, less than a mile away. Apparently, this is a woman who is unclear of the concept. I could have made her the idiot of the day, but I did not. Because, boys and girls, this next story, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
A photo of a Texas teenager posing with drugs, guns, and cash led to the arrest of a 17-year-old along with his passenger. The Bexar County Sheriff's Office says it began an investigation on March 29th after learning the teen was posting to social media that he had THC cartridges, weapons, and cash. The photos were reportedly posted to Instagram. Investigators tracked down the teen and pulled him over. Deputies found hash oil, a loaded handgun, and money in the vehicle. Authorities say they received a search warrant for the teenager and his 21-year-old passenger's home in southwest San Antonio, where they found two handguns, a high-powered pistol, cocaine, hash oil, marijuana, and $15,000 in cash. Both were arrested and booked into the Bexar County Jail. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're a teenager with guns, drugs, and cash, would you gleefully post your cachet on Instagram for all the world to see, like it's your showcase showdown on The Price is Right? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0659. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0659. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including KDXRadio.com, TrueTalkRadio.com, streaming on Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, WLSL-LP-FM in Dade City, Florida, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, and local 107.3 FM in St. John. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.